Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Marian Bartoli.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we weren't supposed to be talking to you like this today. Catherine was supposed to be on a plane and we were supposed to be all having a week off and you were supposed to be listening to our listener question special that we recorded 2 weeks ago. However, things have taken a turn. Catherine isn't on a plane. In fact, she's sitting in her apartment at the moment looking a bit miffed, but it is for obviously a very serious reason, because coronavirus has intervened and cancelled the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells because they had a positive test in the Coachella Valley. So nobody's going anywhere. The tournament isn't being played, and there are lots and lots of tennis players in Indian Wells with nothing to do for the next 2 weeks. And obviously, it's a very, very serious situation globally at the moment. But for us in the tennis world and us here on the Tennis Podcast, we thought we would delay our listener question special and just talk about it, because these are unprecedented times. We've never known anything like this, certainly in my lifetime. I don't think anybody's lifetime that I know. In the sporting world, we are dealing with uncertainty on an enormous scale, things changing by the hour. So, Catherine, why don't you tell us how your last 24 hours have played out? Because about 16 hours ago, we were making fun of you because you were not packed, and turns out you could have just stayed unpacked.
The one time I was disorganized with my packing for a trip and created an unnecessarily stressful packing situation for myself at the last minute, it was the one time I needn't have bothered at all. I should probably say that I fully intend to treat various aspects of the situation with a lot of levity, because I think you have to laugh. I certainly have to laugh. But that's not to say we're not taking the situation extremely seriously. Trust me, I and we are. But and I think one of the reasons we are is well, there's plenty of reasons too. But Matt, you said you had a really great take with one of your tweets about, you know, the sport's supposed to be a refuge, isn't it? It's supposed to be escapism. And when things start to intrude upon that, so that the little corners of the world that are supposed to be safe places and escapism places start to feel unsafe, that's when shit gets real. I hope that the podcast can be a little bit of escapism for people. So making light of what's been a pretty absurd 12 hours, certainly in my life, I hope won't be taken as an indication that I'm not treating the situation with seriousness. But it's been so weird. I can't bring myself to unpack my two enormous cases. They're just laughing at me. They are just sat in my bedroom laughing at me.
Oh, dear. Because, I mean, basically the situation in the UK is that everybody is stocking up on food and toilet rolls, whether they really need to be doing that or not.
Well, mostly toilet rolls.
Yes, toilet rolls are it at the moment, and those are being panic bought. Catherine, you've been going the opposite way. You've got
well,
nothing in your house.
I thought I was going to go away, so I've done whatever the opposite of stockpiling is. That's what I've been doing over this weekend. I've either consumed or thrown away all of the products that might sustain me in an apocalypse scenario. So I've got nothing.
Okay.
I've done an Ocado order, and I've got the dregs of what the rest of the country wasn't interested in stockpiling. Lucky me.
Oh,
luckily, I really enjoy vinegar-based pickled products. Cockles haven't sold out anywhere, so I'll be fine.
Excellent.
I'll be
stinky,
but fine.
Delighted. Well, yeah, and it won't affect us, Catherine, because as you said before we came on air, we're probably only going to have conversations like this from now on, i.e. in the comfort of our own homes, looking at each other on a TV screen or a phone screen.
And I meant it in a positive way, but my naturally downbeat tone of voice made it sound like the most depressing statement of all time. But the silver lining I was attempting to grasp for was that, can you imagine experiencing any of this without Wi-Fi?
No, I can't. So anyway, I mean, fortunately, we don't have to imagine that, and therefore we are here for you on
not
the Tennis Podcast. Yes, it could go down at any time, given that mine is not normally the most stable up here in the Midlands. Matt's just come back from a tennis tournament, or a Fed Cup tie. We'll ask you about that in a minute, Matt. But it's been a bit of a bit of a whirlwind the last 24 hours, and Steve Simon has been speaking. We've had, first of all, I heard overnight that from you two, in fact, that this tournament wasn't going to happen. I woke to 77 unread messages on WhatsApp in the middle of the night, and you two both knew ahead of me.
Matt and I were in a very surreal situation where we were awake at an inappropriate time, and you were asleep.
Yes, it was like everything was wrong. Well, the last message I received before going to sleep was Catherine saying, "I've packed." I inexplicably woke up at 2 a.m., checked my phone, Indian Wells had been cancelled, messaged the Tennis Podcast WhatsApp group thinking, 2 a.m., Catherine's got an early flight, David's normally up about 3 a.m. anyway. Chances are someone's going to be online in a minute. And I waited and I waited. And then suddenly Catherine was awake. I had sort of placed money on David being first to be up, but that didn't happen.
Despite the early flight.
Yes. So that was how I found out and shared the news.
Now, the situation is one case has been detected in the Coachella Valley. It sounds as though they had been considering this move for a few days. They certainly had been ramping up the precautions over the last few days. They'd already said that people could have their money back if they didn't want to attend. They were going to make ball kids wear gloves. They weren't going to let them look after towels and bring them to players, which I think was wildly greeted with shouts of hallelujah, because we've been waiting for that to be brought in regardless of an event or of an outbreak like this. But it was last minute. It was absolutely last minute. Qualifying was due to take place today. Tommy Haas, the tournament director, came out and said it's obviously hugely disappointing. It sounds as though their hand has been forced to some degree by the local authorities in that particular part of the world. And depending where you are in the world, obviously the severity of the outbreaks are different depending on where you are. And if you've only got one particular case there, then that doesn't sound like necessarily an automatically acute reason on its own to do this. But it does depend on how you view this stuff, doesn't it? Because things have escalated so quickly in places like Italy and obviously China before that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of factors to be discussed. They obviously haven't sort of published detailed account of the reasoning for the cancellation. We're kind of filling in the blanks and making assumptions. And I speaking to a health data science expert, which is what needs to be happening more, in my view, just listening to experts because they're the only ones that really know. The part of the panic, or a large part of the panic in the situation, is just filling a vacuum of information. And they think that, you know, at this stage, erring on the side of caution is a valid course of action because of that lack of information. We don't know how many people are currently infected or infectious. We don't know what the transmission rate is, and we don't really know what the death rate is. So there's a difference between the macro response and the micro response, and the macro, obviously on a global scale, is more important. Hosting an event where thousands of people are coming from across the globe to mingle together in close proximity, it might in hindsight be proven to be an overreaction, but with the lack of information about our current situation, it seems sensible to err on the side of caution. And that's not to say that I'm, you know, running around in a state of panic, wearing a Tupperware box on my head, which has been seen on the London Underground this week. I'm absolutely not. But on a macro scale, in terms of sporting events, I get it. I do get it.
Yeah. I think we all do, really. And there is that feeling of the unknown, because Indian Wells have said that they would like to hold the event later in the year. They've said that it will not take place at this time. They were very clear about that. Now, goodness knows when they would be able to do that.
Well, I wonder if they're eyeing the Asian swing.
Yeah.
In the calendar. I don't know. I mean, there aren't gaps in the tennis calendar, are there? But I also do wonder, I mean, this is totally total guesswork, which seems an appropriate place to be. It's the average age of the population in Palm Springs is a retirement village, really, isn't it? It's a rich person's retirement village. So I do wonder if that has been at least a factor.
And I think there's a lot of those people who make up a lot of the people that go to the tournament and who volunteer and work at that tournament as well. And I completely agree. As far as I'm concerned, if the health officials are advising that it's too much of a risk and it's putting, and having a large gathering is putting more people at risk and public health at risk, then it ends there. As far as I'm concerned, if that's the advice, they have to follow it. I think for people to be questioning whether or not this is the right decision, you know, those people are not more informed than the health officials in the area. You have to believe they wouldn't have taken this decision lightly, and they've come to it with, you know, all the with the information that's available to them.
I think what I find slightly alarming is that this shows up how uncoordinated globally the response is, that it's not even sort of country by country. It's literally tournament by tournament. We're awaiting now a decision from Miami as to whether that event will go ahead. And of course, everybody's already questioning events. I mean, other tour events too, but you know, you've got Charleston on the WTA tour, which a lot of people are trying to get wild cards into. You've got Stuttgart, you've got Monte Carlo, you've got Madrid and Rome. And everyone's kind of waiting for each individual tournament to decide upon its approach. And, you know, in the year 2020, it kind of feels like with this nature of thing, we should be working towards some kind of coordinated strategy. So I do find it slightly, I mean, maybe that will come. I hope that will come. But the fact that this decision, which sets an incredible world precedent, not just in sport, has essentially been made by, you know, the tournament, I do find pretty extraordinary.
Interesting as well that the New York Times spoke to the WTA's CEO, Steve Simon, who said, "We were supportive of the concept of playing the tournament behind closed doors, but ultimately the tournament didn't feel it was in their best interest," which is quite a strong statement, really. And I mean, obviously, from a tour perspective, you've got the tournaments, but you've also got the players. You've got players who are there in their hundreds, basically without jobs for the next couple of weeks, and that will be an element of the reasoning for why he said that. But it's that sounds as though they have been at odds.
I'm just going to interrupt this very serious moment briefly because a neighbour has just walked past my window with her dog wearing a face mask.
Right.
You know that hysteria I was talking about?
Was she wearing a face mask or
no.
not? No.
Only the dog.
Right. Okay, well, dogs are more important, some people think.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't want Rosie to start wearing a face mask. I'm just, you know, just mentioning it.
Right.
I am
okay.
saying that.
Yeah, we do have to.
Sorry,
we do
Matt,
have
you
to
be serious for a moment. I'll just digest what I've just seen.
That in itself is an interesting angle to this, isn't it? Because not necessarily all tournaments are going to feel the same. I mean, there are so many knock-on effects to the tennis economy, just as its own little world, because so many people don't have the deep pockets of a Larry Ellison or necessarily the funding behind them, and some may want it to go ahead because of that. I agree with you ultimately. You've just got to do the right thing health-wise because this can't go on like this indefinitely.
When that decision was made to cancel the tournament rather than hold it behind closed doors, that I was initially trying to compare it to football matches that have been shut behind closed doors and the Davis Cup ties just this past weekend that we saw, but I just think a tournament like Indian Wells, 2 weeks, is it economically viable to have a tournament for 2 weeks without spectators? And, you know, I think tennis, a huge part of the income comes from ticket sales. And, you know, I think 450,000 people go to Indian Wells every year. I just don't know the logistics of holding it. I'm sure that was a factor in it, in that decision as well.
I hadn't quite realised the contrast in tennis to other sports in terms of the proportion of revenue generally that comes from ticket sales as opposed to broadcast rights or sponsorship. It's a bit bigger proportion of income and revenue in tennis than it is certainly in football and I think rugby as well, and other sporting events that we've seen measures being taken in. But I mean, by all accounts, I mean, certainly on the WTA side, because we've had that pretty strong statement, I think, from Steve Simon. I think the implications of it are clear, and I would, logic dictates that the same position would be held by the ATP. It shows up once again, the massive conflict of interest at the heart of tennis's organisation structure and of those bodies, because the ATP and the WTA represent both the players and the tournaments. And on this occasion, the players and the tournaments' interests were completely in opposition, I think.
Mm-hmm. It certainly did feel as though the majority of players were there and wanting it to go ahead and surprised that it wasn't. But yeah, I think that's a pretty short term view generally. Whilst I understand why they're saying that,
but it going ahead behind closed doors isn't a short term view. I don't think that necessarily means that they were saying let's just push on as normal. But for them, it's their life, it's their job. Obviously, it's better to play with an enormous crowd, and I'm sure most would appreciate the economic factors involved with not staging it. But for them, I guess it could feel like baby out with the bathwater. You know, yes, it's not ideal, but we've still got lives to lead and incomes to make, and it is still possible to do that, albeit in a compromised scenario, I guess would be a lot of their views.
I mean, for me, it really came into focus this weekend when I was in Hungary for the Davis Cup. I had quite a long chat with Kim Okopiyans, as you do.
An NBF, Matt.
Yeah. And I was talking with him about his schedule. He was flying straight from Budapest off to Kazakhstan to play a challenger. And obviously lots of challenger events have already been affected by coronavirus. And I was talking about his schedule and he said, well, to be honest, I just don't know what the schedule is at the moment. He's a player outside the top 100. He needs to play events to survive, to make a living. I think in this sense, tennis is confronting what normal businesses and normal, people with 9-to-5 jobs are experiencing about what coronavirus will do to the economy. And then when you get a cancellation of somewhere like Indian Wells, it jolts you even more and it scales that problem up massively, because suddenly you've got players affected, but also media, staff, all sorts of people. It's just massively scaled up from what we've already seen happening and what players have already been experiencing on the Challenger Tour. This is now just, it's gone boom. And there's I think Simon Briggs was talking in his article about a kind of a chain of logic that more events are going to be affected. And this is most likely going to be more than just a 2-week thing affecting Indian Wells.
I should say as well that the tournament have said that they will put the players up for a week in the official hotels so that they can practice at the tournament, because that's one of the issues, isn't it? It's where'd you go? It's hard enough. We were talking about it the other day about how when you lose first round, you may lose first round in Indian Wells and then have quite a long time until you go to Miami. And here they're just kind of in limbo.
You know, the other day on WhatsApp, and I described a tennis spectating experience I had at Wimbledon as like a tennis lock-in. Well, that's what's going down at Indian Wells this week, isn't it? If only they'd made the decision like 6 hours later, I could have been on that plane and in the lock-in. And this spray tan that I had done wouldn't look quite so absurd. I'm self isolating due to the absurdity of my appearance in a cold London climate.
And the only people who are ever going to get to see it are us.
Yeah, my struggle is real. Like everyone listening to this is getting the violins out.
She's got new glasses.
Yeah, these weren't cheap. I had to get that. I had to get like a special
anti-reflective.
Yeah, for telly. It was going to be the first time I'd worn glasses on telly, because I'm not allowed to wear contact lenses for 2 months. So I thought, I did extensive research and shopping for glasses that would work on telly. I got a special coating that cost an arm and a leg. You two are going to be the only people that see these bloody glasses.
Now, David's already put them on Instagram.
Oh yeah, I forgot that. But I haven't put the spray tan on, so
Well, imagine that picture, just a little bit more orange.
I should have put a filter on it.
I'm sure there's a filter that does that for you. Yeah,
right. Is the one that can take it off?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Okay. Oh dear! What a 24 hours, and what a bizarre situation we all find ourselves in. We're making light of it because, well, what else can we do? We've done the serious chat. I mean, the fact is, we have absolutely no idea when tennis will be played again professionally, or at least at the highest level.
We've had an announcement from the French Sporting Ministry or the Ministry of Culture to say that all major sporting events in France will be played without crowds or limited to crowds of under 1,000 until April the 15th. Now, Monte Carlo isn't in France, but is you know, it, to all intents and purposes, logically, in a situation like this, it sort of ought to be treated as if it were, especially with its proximity to northern Italy as well. So you'd have to think that event is in major question. I mean, the thing is, though, everything's changing so quickly and precedents are being set by the day. We delayed the recording of this podcast a little to see if Miami, the Miami event, made an announcement, because that's surely coming one way or another. They've made one social media post since...
I think someone forgot to delete a scheduled tweet.
Yeah.
Those things are dangerous.
Which does happen, but it doesn't look great. Yeah, they've done one tweet since the announcement from Indian Wells, and it was about ticket sales. It was about buying tickets for the tournament. So, bit tone deaf. But I'm sure, I'm sure that was an oversight in terms of scheduled tweets, rather than somebody making it. A catastrophically terrible social media decision. Not that those don't happen every single day, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
They do. Just one note, a couple of other things to discuss, but just one note from Bill on Twitter, who says, "We don't know much about this virus. We don't know when or if the Indian Wells tournament will be played. We don't know what lies in store for Miami, Monte Carlo, etc. So what do we know? We know that Bianca Andreescu will continue indefinitely to not lose completed tennis matches."
Yeah, and we know that Roger Federer is some sort of weird mystic. I mean, has anyone ever timed a surgery better? It's ridiculous, isn't it? Smuggity, smug, smug Federer.
Mm, yeah. And actually, when the circuit does start again, I mean... It could be like, look, I'm going to look on the bright side. It could be like when you have loads of rain and then suddenly you get this stacked schedule of matches and there's loads going on and you don't know where to watch.
Oh, no, I don't like those days.
No.
Oh, those, come on.
Those days stress Matt out big time.
Yeah, but they're great fun.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I've got a better comparison for you, David.
Go on, then.
It could be like the first... post-war Olympics in 1948 in London, because the Olympics weren't held during the Second World War.
Right.
And 1948 was, obviously it was in London, so it was great. But, yeah, it could have that sort of feel about it.
Well, I mean, that's it, isn't it? So often, I mean, that tweet I put out earlier, the one you referred to, Catherine, so often sport isn't affected by these sort of national disasters and global tragedies. It goes on. Sport goes on. It's always there. It is a refuge. And to be in this situation where it's not there is really confusing, I think. And it's weird that that's twice now that tennis has kind of been thrusted into a bit of a global emergency this year. Because obviously it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about potentially the awful bushfires in Australia cancelling the Australian Open. I mean, then tennis became a force for good in that situation with all the funds it was able to raise. But obviously now it's been caught by this coronavirus, and yeah, we're just in this situation of not knowing, which is very unfamiliar.
Mm.
It is discombobulating, isn't it? It's yeah.
It is.
Well, I mean, what are we going to do for 2 weeks? I mean, I've literally got not one single plan for the next fortnight. A friend of the podcast, Sarah Woolland, sent us a link to an advert that's gone out for people to willingly get infected with the coronavirus for research purposes. They're looking for 24 candidates in the UK to get infected with the two weakest strains of the disease for vaccine research purposes, and you get quarantined for 2 weeks. And I thought, well, I've got nothing on. I could do a real national service. And then, you know, touch wood, provided you recover, you've got immunity.
So, right. So are you doing
I'm
it?
Not, I'm not, I think broadly I've decided not to do it.
Right.
But did cross my mind, you know, someone's got to do it. Yeah, nothing else on. I've watched the whole series of Love is Blind.
I've got a good box set of the OC if you fancy that.
I might end up having to resort to that.
I've not heard anything about that over the last week, after all. I've had a few messages about that. A few fans, actually. Mostly people just looking in bewilderment. But anyway, can we talk about tennis for a little bit?
There's none to talk about. You know,
just to cheer ourselves up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've got some tennis things to talk about because tennis has happened this week. First of all, Matt, your Fed Cup tie. What was it like?
Davis Cup tie.
Sorry.
Yes, it was.
It's because it's all Belgium. That's why I just get confused.
I've just become Belgium tennis correspondent accidentally. Hungary Belgium. Hungary qualified. It was a really good tie, actually. Four of the five matches were deciding sets. It came down to the deciding set of the deciding match. Hungary's two-man team of Attila Balázs and Martin Fucsovics eventually managed to beat Belgium's David Goffin-Lus team. It was just classic Davis Cup, really. Everything that you expect that competition to be, with the ultimate prize of getting to Madrid in November. So Hungary are going to be there for the first time. They weren't there last year. It was a fun tie, and to think that it's the last tennis that I might be watching for a while, I think I made the most of it.
We need people to volunteer to have their like local tennis matches filmed and televised. Just anything to feed the addiction.
I think me against Sally Hall Simon the other day would go down a treat.
I'll take it. It can be my methadone.
I only hit one winner in an hour and 45 minutes.
On second thoughts.
Maybe not.
But I extracted several unforced errors.
This was a score that wasn't a score.
Yeah, David triumphantly texted through a erroneous tennis score as if it was something to celebrate.
We stopped at 4-6-6-4, which was better than 1-6-1-6 from the previous week. So I was quite happy with that.
If anyone's got some better tennis that they're willing to have televised for us to talk about on future podcasts indefinitely, let us know.
Don't worry, I've got ideas, folks. The tennis podcast is not going to end. We're all right for next week anyway, because we've got our listener question special that we recorded before we knew all this was going to happen. And we only answered five questions out of about 200. So, I'm sure we can do more than that.
What have we got without tennis chat? It's basically a dog podcast, isn't it?
Trust me.
Slightly dodgy TV series from the 90s and noughties, by the sound of things.
The other tennis that was going on, one of them was the Lyon tournament, won by Sofia Kenin, who won four back-to-back three-set matches. And I find it pretty extraordinary that she went straight from winning the Australian Open to playing in Fed Cup to playing in Dubai and Doha, lost first round in singles in both of those, but played doubles in both events as well, and then has played this tournament in Lyon and won it with some real battles. I think that's partly just sums up who she is and what she's all about, and it also sums up how exuberant she is and how nobody said to her, do you know what? Grand Slam champions don't do that, those sort of things. You know, they normally just take a month off after winning a Grand Slam. But she is great, isn't she?
Yeah, she really is. And I love that she's done this now, because people were starting to script the narrative about her having this big letdown, this big disappointment and drop off after winning that surprise maiden Grand Slam title in Australia. Has success come too soon? Is she struggling to adjust to her new status, etc., etc.? I feel like just the first pen to paper of that narrative was starting to happen, even though those two first round losses in Dubai and Doha were, you know, they could easily have been quarter final matches or semi final matches. And you know, the depth on the WTA tour, they're completely legit matches to lose. But I love that she's done this. I really do. It sends such a statement for me.
Yeah, it's the most Sofia Kenin title run imaginable, isn't it? That her next title after her maiden slam is a slightly obscure event in Lyon. She's done it with four battling three setters. I mean, I think it just shows that she's not been too changed by that, you know, by that Australian Open victory. She's just going to keep being her and keep doing her thing, and that's what's going to take her places. Yeah, it was great.
Also, should say that when there was still tennis going on in Indian Wells, i.e. at the Challenger event that they have just the week before it, Jack Sock suddenly went from being a man that only won two matches in about 15 months to winning four in a row and getting to the final. And well done him. I mean, I think he a little bit like Kenin, won a batch of three-set matches, real epics, and scrapped his way to the final. And I'm just really pleased for him, because I don't know him, but he looks like he's had a pretty tough time. Maybe some of it was self-inflicted. I know he's had injuries as well, but I just think that was really, really impressive, the way he got through to the final. He ended up losing to Steve Johnson.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, Steve Johnson's had a pretty tough time as well, a completely different kind of tough time, but he has, to a less drastic extent, dropped off a bit of a cliff after making the top 20 a few years ago, you know, and has had a very publicly terrible time with his father passing away a couple of years ago. Yeah, it all seemed to stem from, or certainly from the outside, it stemmed from that win in Delray Beach, didn't it? That first win, that first tour level win for Jack Sock since 2018, and that cathartic moment he had on the court there, where he let it all out and showed how much he cares and how tough it's been. And I don't know, it looked from the outside like a real release for Jack Sock, and a real watershed moment for us looking in as in terms of an insight into how much he does care. I don't know where it feels like he's on a wave of momentum, which he could do with continuing to ride. I don't know where he's going to find future waves to ride. He might need to go and play Solihull Simon.
He can't beat him. He's tough, I tell you. So, yeah. Any other tennis happened this last week?
Well, someone we talked about, I think it was on last week's podcast, Alina Svitolina won in Monterrey. She got, I think, four or five wins there and won the title. Yeah, after just a really difficult start to the season where she was not even winning sets. So that's good to see her get back on track there, albeit at a slightly lower level tournament. But that's exactly the kind of thing she needed to do. And as you said, hopefully, you know, it feels like that would have set her up for a better run at Indian Wells and Miami. But obviously, that's on hold now. But I think you saw some of the Konta's matches there as well. I must say that tournament slightly passed me by because I was in Hungary. But I think you were watching a bit of Konta.
It did me as well, Matt. But my plan is to just pretend that it's happening this week and to go back and watch the matches on replay. Pretend that it's happening now. I mean, how long can we last for doing that? We'll be watching matches from 1984 before we know it on YouTube. Anyway, David, Konta.
Yes, Jo Konta. Yeah, I did see her match again. Did I see the Clijsters one? I saw the end of the Clijsters one, and yeah, she was pretty good in that. And the run she had was decent. I think it kind of put behind her a little bit of the loss of confidence she's had recently. But then in that semi final that I saw her play against Marie Buzkova, who played really well. She was clearly struggling with her knee, and she had treatment after the first set. It didn't look good, actually, and I would have been concerned for her, really, as being able to play Indian Wells and Miami. And there was a lovely on-court interview with Buzkova at the end, who just made it clear how much it meant to her to reach her first final. She was tearful on the court. It was a lovely moment. But yeah, concern for Konta. Kim Clijsters, in fits and starts, played well. She hit a load of aces, but she also hit a lot of errors in that match against Konta. She's still clearly some way off, and it's going to take a while, you would have thought, to even if she's able to get back at all to the top level. But I mean, we find ourselves in this holding pattern for tennis now, because everything is on hold. Just one final note from me was, it was International Women's Day yesterday, and Andy Murray had penned an article which we circulated last night, and it talk about summing up how I think we all feel about women's tennis and attitudes within tennis generally to women. He just hit the nail on the head in such a straightforward, understandable way. And I'd love the whole of the men's locker room to just read that article.
Yeah, there's something really simplistic about that article, which was so perfect because it's just such a simple and obvious state of affairs and triumph for tennis that we have this head start, as Chris Clary put it, Matt, in your chat to him in Madrid at the end of last year. We have this huge advantage. We've been ahead of the curve, tennis has, and other sports have been scrabbling to catch up while we've been squandering that advantage, seemingly, with internecine struggles and debating. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the debate's settled. It all speaks for itself, and we've been moving backwards, and Andy Murray just made that sound so simple and obvious. Which
what he said here was, Andy Murray wrote, out of all the global sports, tennis is the best in terms of equal prize money and male and female players competing at the same events. But the thing I find interesting is that rather than being celebrated, this is often questioned within the sport. It's attractive to people watching, sponsors, TV, everyone. So don't waste your time arguing about it. Let's celebrate it and actually use it to our advantage to grow the sport around the world.
Yeah,
end,
I mean,
end of debate.
It ends.
Yeah, yeah. There was a brilliant similarity between the simplicity of his words and the simplicity of what he was saying, and just how obvious it is. You know, the final word, the final line of the piece was, "How can you not see that it's a good thing?" Which just summed it up perfectly.
So there we are. That's about it for the tennis podcast, I think, this week. Anything else?
Should just say that the draw for the Davis Cup finals. We can watch. We can watch draws. We can't watch tennis. Is happening on Thursday. So that's when we'll find out the groups for the finals in Madrid later in the year.
Right. Okay.
And probably the biggest story was Argentina losing to Colombia. So Argentina, with all their host of players, won't be there. And Ecuador beat Japan, which was one of the ties with behind closed doors. I think Nishioka wasn't able to travel to the tie because there was a fear that he wouldn't be able to get back into the US. Obviously, now the fact that Indian Wells has been cancelled has rendered that less of an issue as well. So it, you know, it's all connected.
Mm. Spare a thought for John Millman, who sacrificed a piss up to celebrate Australia's success in order to jump on a plane to get to Indian Wells.
Yeah, those photos from the Australia celebrations, yet to be explained why Alex Bolt has got a bloody mouth on the court. Have you not seen that? He's got like a chipped tooth on the court during the celebrations. He's literally bleeding.
Crikey.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, that's on Getty. I don't know what's happened there. Martin Fucsovics did not sacrifice his piss up. He told me that he had delayed his flight to Indian Wells specifically so that he could celebrate hard, I think, with the Hungarian team.
So he's a winner in every way.
Final bit of tennis player content news before we wrap up. Tsitsipas has been creating content.
Right. I mean,
which one?
I didn't see it. You saw his. He did an Instagram live today or something.
Yeah, he went on Instagram.
He also did
live.
A few days ago, he did a very questionable tweet about hair conditioner, which I'm not going to repeat. But if you want to look it up, go for it.
That was the one I thought you were referring to.
Right.
Initially.
I mean, that was. I don't say this lightly, but I do think that was peak weird from Tsitsipas. I really do. If he tops that.
I don't want him to.
Will be in a weirder place than it is today.
Right.
But he's also produced some live content today.
Yeah, Instagram live. I don't know, it must have been about 4 o'clock in the morning where he was. And there he was talking about how much music inspires him and playing it really loudly so that you couldn't really hear what he was saying. And he was in the middle of uploading a video, one that he couldn't upload from the Philippines, where he was for Davis Cup with Greece, because as much as he liked playing in Manila, he was very disappointed by the Wi-Fi, and he was unable to FaceTime his family, and he was unable to upload his vlog.
Oh dear.
First world problems. Tsitsipas edition, yeah.
Tsitsipas's social media feeds will from now on be the source of everyone's escapism from reality, because he is living on a different planet. Let's all live there with him.
Part of me thought, oh, Tsitsipas is live on Instagram. Maybe he's talking about Indian Wells. And then I got there and I thought, of course he's not talking about Indian Wells. He's sort of uploading his vlog to us all. Of course. And actually, it was better that he was doing that.
Thank you, Stefanos.
So, there we are. That's where we are in the tennis world at the moment, folks. A bit of a different tennis podcast from us this week. We'll have our listener question special next week. Well, we've done it. We might as well. What else are we going to talk about?
Well, I don't know. We wouldn't have thought we'd have been talking about this a week ago.
No. Maybe
I'm just trying to keep people on their toes, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, yeah. We'll keep you up to date, keep across our social media and keep across our newsletter. What are we going to predict?
we might
not get it wrong this week. I've got to do my Ask Me Anything on Reddit, which is a big old group of people now. So if you want to get yourself on Reddit, go down your show notes.
Can you record it so we can put it out as a podcast?
I don't ask me anything that could go terribly wrong.
We're in desperate need of content in the weeks to come.
Don't you worry, Catherine. I've got loads of ideas that I've been saving up for this moment.
That's precisely why I am worrying.
You can't just have a 2-week nap. Catherine.
If anyone wants to come over and unpack my suitcases for me, I will. That is, yeah. Offers are open. I'm open to offers.
I think I'm
busy. I can't face it. I unpacked my hand luggage earlier and it was really bad.
It's not what you want to be doing, is it? Packing and within 24 hours unpacking.
I can't find anything. It's just rubbish.
Oh, dear. But, well, there we are, folks. I hope wherever you are listening to us that you are personally staying safe and that you are not too downbeat about everything in the world and the tennis world. It's not great fun at the moment, is it? But hopefully things improve soon and that tennis recommences hastily. But with that, we leave you here on the Tennis Podcast. We'll be back very soon and we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.